Chapter 10. Dustin. Another trip into town, another truck full of everything the farm couldn't live without for the next week or so. Bags of grain, a bag of nails, a handful of insulators for the hot wire fences, light bulbs, a stack of boards and a few posts. The weekly errands were probably my least favorite thing to do, aside from the farm's books. Anything that wasn't working with the horses pretty much fell into that category. But it needed to be done, and after two long road trips to long competitions, I really couldn't complain. At least I'd be home today and sleeping in my own bed tonight. I walked out of the hardware store with the last bag of miscellaneous things I'd had to pick up on this trip. "Why on earth do you need a truck that big?" my aunt had asked when she visited last year. I slammed the tailgate and eyed the securely tied pile of necessities. That's why. After a few more errands, I topped off the tank and headed home, all the while muttering to myself about the skyrocketing price of diesel. And when in God's name were they going to repave that one stretch of road between the river and downtown?
Great, I'm turning into my father.
I chuckled and continued along the endless strip of deteriorating pavement and, after a few miles, dusty gravel. Along either side of the road, massive equipment sprayed water over the corn, wheat, and alfalfa fields. With as much as I was paying lately just to keep water troughs full, I was sure the farmers out here were paying a fortune for irrigation this year. It hadn't rained in a while now. That wasn't all that unusual for eastern Washington, but the arid heat would get less and less bearable, not to mention more disastrous to agriculture, the deeper summer sank its teeth in. Weatherman said the rain would come soon, and I hoped he was right. In fact, I'd picked up a stack of sandbags while I was out today because when that rain came, if it was anything like last year and the year before, it wouldn't be just a little bit of drizzle like the people on the other side of the state got all year. No, when it rained here after a dry spell, especially in the summer, it meant Noah's Ark-style business. Driving down that long, familiar stretch of country road, no matter how much I tried to think of the farm and the weather, my mind kept going back to Amy. I hadn't been able to keep her out of my mind lately, even when I was away at a competition or just trying and failing to sleep while she lived right next door. I was going crazy. No two ways about it. I knew damn well better than to get involved with a woman whose wounds were raw, and no matter how well she hid it, or how badly she hid it, Amy had no shortage of very fresh, very deep wounds. Part of me wanted to help her through that, and part of me just plain old wanted her. Didn't matter which of those two things was stronger, because they both added up to stay the hell away, Dustin, stay away. I rested my elbow below the window and rubbed the back of my neck as I continued down the long road. I wanted to tell myself it could be different with Amy, but I knew better. She was hurting. She was healing. And that had proven to be a dangerous combination for me too many times in the past. Several times bitten, 100 times shy. She was attractive, beyond attractive. But she wasn't ready for anything. She couldn't possibly be, not when her husband wasn't cold in the grave. And I knew from experience the only thing harder than wanting a woman was wanting her back. So I'd just keep my hands off and let her get through everything she wasn't talking about. I'd keep my distance and wouldn't delude myself with thoughts of her staying here instead of going back to that other life she didn't know I knew about. She's not a rescue. Somebody hurt her. She's not a rescue, Dustin. A rescue? Of course she wasn't. She wasn't an animal, for God's sake. But she was hurt. And I was sure if anyone knew about this train of thought, they'd give me a knowing look and remind me that I saw every wounded or traumatized animal as a rehabilitation project. Everyone who knew me had done plenty of loud speculation that that wasn't far from how I went into relationships with women. Which was bullshit as far as I was concerned. Okay, so my ex-wife had been fresh out of an excruciating breakup when we'd started dating. And the veterinarian I'd slept with for a little while last year had just left her jackass of a husband. It wasn't like I went looking for women with raw wounds, and I'd been burned enough times to know better, one would hope, than to fall for another woman who wasn't emotionally ready to stick around, once she had her feet under her again. And for God's sake, being concerned to the point of distraction about someone who'd been hurt like she obviously had been didn't mean a damn thing. Anyone with an ounce of compassion would have been worried about her. It didn't mean I needed to make it my mission to put her back together like some kind of rescued horse. Nor did any of that make her any less attractive. Or me any less tempted. 45 minutes after I left town, I pulled up and parked in front of the duplex. The two-horse trailer caught my eye. It was facing me in its usual covered parking spot and wasn't hooked to the truck, but its rear and escape doors were wide open. I eyed it, wondering if Dad had asked Amy to clean it out or something. He was picking up a couple of brood mares this weekend and needed it, but I was pretty sure it was still clean from the last time we'd used it. Whatever, I was sure Dad and Amy had it under control. I jotted down the miles I'd driven, then picked up the handful of receipts and went into the barn. The office door was open, and when I stepped in, Dad was at the desk with his glasses almost falling off the end of his nose. "Working on the books?" I asked. "Mm-hmm." "Great." I set the thin stack of receipts on the desk. "Mind putting these in while you're at it?" He glared at the stack, then looked up at me.
"I'm just about done here. So you can add those when you have time. By the way, did you get a water tank?"
I swore under my breath. "Damn it, I completely forgot." Dad shrugged.
"The one out in the pasture will hold for a little while longer. Best not put it off too much, though. Bottom's about to fall out of that thing."
"I'll make a note of it," I said. "By the way, the straight load trailer is open. You have Amy cleaning it out before this weekend or something?" Dad looked up.
"Amy didn't mention anything to you?"
No. I cocked my head.
"Is she doing something with it?"
He shrugged.
"She said something about getting blue into it."
I blinked.
"Blue? Seriously?" "She's allowed to work with him, ain't she?"
Yeah, she is, but the trailer..." The day I took blue from McBride's place flickered through my head. And even the post-sedative attempts at getting him to load weren't pretty. "I'm just going to go check on her." I left the office and headed back out to the parking area, walking just a little faster because I had visions of all the disasters that could unfold once Blue realized he was getting into the trailer. As I stepped out of the barn, I couldn't see Amy, just Blue. He stood behind the trailer, his front feet at the bottom of the ramp and his neck stretched out as far as it could go. His jaw moved like he was chewing something. Well, that was promising, I supposed. I'd never seen Blue so calm within spitting distance of a trailer. He wasn't in a great hurry to get in it, but he wasn't freaking out either. I approached slowly but not silently. I wanted to be sure he heard me so I didn't scare him. My feet crunched on the gravel, and as I got closer, Blue lifted his head and looked at me. He still seemed entirely too calm. How strange. And he wasn't loose. His lead rope drooped a little from below his halter, then curved upward to where it was either tied or held. As I came around the side of the trailer, I found Amy. She stood on the other side of the divider, casually leaning on it and holding the other end of Blue's lead rope. Hair pulled back in her baseball cap, she was dusty. She was sweaty, and she looked just as amazing as she ever did. She smiled.
"Hey, hope you don't mind me using the trailer. I would have asked, but you were gone."
"Don't worry about it." I reached up and scratched Blue's withers. "How's he doing?"
"Oh, he's thinking about it."
Amy shrugged, smiling down at Blue as he strained to reach a tiny pile of oats on the mat inside the trailer.
"How long have you been working on him with this?"
"Just started," she said.
"Well, okay, like an hour ago?"
I nodded, watching Blue. "Looks like he's making progress."
"It's getting less scary, at least," she said. "But we'll see how long it takes for him to get all the way in and stand quietly for a road trip."
One thing at a time, right?
Yep.
Just watch him when he backs up, I said.
Oh?
Has a bit of a problem with rearing. I gestured at the top of the trailer. Could be an issue in here. Amy smiled. Without a word, she came down the ramp. She gave the rope a tug and Blue raised his head.
Back,
she said, her tone firm but not sharp as she stepped toward him and tugged the rope again.
Back up.
And I'll be damned if Blue didn't take one step back, then another. After 5 straight, quiet steps, she looked at me and grinned.
What were you saying about having problems with him?
I stand corrected, apparently. I held out my hand. Mind if I give it a try?
You're the boss.
She handed me the coiled lead rope. I looked at Blue. Back. I stepped toward him and kept the rope taut. Blue, back up. He resisted for a second, but then did as he was told. Not exactly straight, like a show horse would be expected to do, but he sure backed up. And he didn't rear or fuss. When I asked him to stop, he did so just as quietly.
Wow.
I handed the rope back to Amy.
How long did that take you?
Couple of days.
She led him back to the trailer's ramp and took her place by the divider again.
Maybe it's an issue with the bit. He really hasn't given me much trouble backing in a halter, but I haven't tried bidding him up and then doing it.
I watched Blue strain for the pile of oats in the trailer that he couldn't quite reach. Maybe that's the next step, then. I looked at Amy. He ground drives very nicely, but that's where I ran into the rearing issue.
Want me to try ground driving him?
If you... I stopped as Blue took a step onto the ramp. Then another. He was still outside the trailer, but he'd gained some ground. His head and neck, plus the very point of his shoulder, were inside, and his front feet were on the ramp.
Good boy.
Amy patted him as he munched triumphantly on the oats that were now well within reach. So what else is on his agenda? I asked. Now that trailering is a little less traumatic. She smiled.
Well, let's not celebrate this one yet. He's only partway in.
Still.
We'll celebrate when we can drive him around the block and unload him without drugging him within an inch of his life.
Sounds like a plan.
But I'm also working on some other stuff with him.
She finger-combed a tangle out of his short black mane.
Mostly just getting him used to being handled. Ground manners, that kind of thing.
And he's getting better? I asked. In general.
Oh yeah, she said. Much. He's not walking over the top of me anymore, and he's just been quieter across the board lately.
Good to hear, I said. Oh, and if you want to ground drive him, the surcingle and reins are in the tack room. There's a bridle hanging right next to the surcingle. I last used it on Star, so you might have to adjust it for him.
I might give that a try tomorrow. He's been...
Blue took another step. One rear foot made it onto the ramp, then the other. Amy and I both watched in still silence as he tried to reach the next pile of oats. His front left foot started to lift off the ramp, but he kept trying to reach the treat on his own. Then he put his foot down. Inside the trailer. A back foot moved up the ramp. The other front foot landed in the trailer.
Good boy!
Amy patted his back again.
Good boy, Blue.
My God, I said. There might be hope for him yet.
Yes, there is.
Moving slowly and carefully, Amy ducked under the divider and came up on the same side as Blue. She let him finish his oats, which of course meant giving him a chance to vacuum every square inch of rubber mat within reach in case he'd missed one.
Okay, buddy, she said, bringing his head up. That's enough for one day.
She stepped toward him.
Back up.
He backed up. His steps were slow, not quite as steady as they'd been when we backed him on level ground, but Amy didn't push him as he carefully navigated the ramp. She looked at me and gestured at the side of the trailer.
There's a coffee can on top of the wheel well. Could you hand it to me?
I picked it up and held it out to her. She scooped out a handful of oats and offered it to Blue. As he ate it, she praised and patted him again.
Tussling his forelock, she said,
"Maybe tomorrow we'll try getting all the way into the big scary box."
"Looks like you're well on your way," I said. She nodded.
"I just didn't want to push him today. Better to quit while we're ahead and not have to deal with scaring him all over again on his way out."
"Good idea." I patted Blue's rump. "Well, whatever it is you're doing, keep it up. He's doing great."
"Thanks."
I smiled, then turned to go.
"Dustin?"
I turned around. Amy smiled.
"Thank you for letting me do this."
"Thanks for doing it," I said. "You're making great progress with him." Neither of us spoke. We just exchanged smiles and then went back to our own tasks. And maybe it was just because my initial impression of her was so far off from reality, but she couldn't possibly have imagined what it did to me. Seeing her working with Blue like this, how much more attractive she was now that I'd seen her gentle, experienced hand working with the horses. Nothing put me off a woman more than apathy and indifference toward animals, and by the same token, nothing made her more attractive than, well, than this. Exactly what Amy was doing now with Blue. I wondered if she had any clue at all what she was doing to me.